You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Wire.
I was lucky enough to spend my summer overseas in Indonesia. And during my time there, I got to visit Bantar Gebang, Southeast Asia's largest landfill. And Risa Bernard, the founder of BGBJ, the school on the landfill, hosted my visit. In part one, I talked to the trash pickers of Bantar Gebang and the dangerous work often undertaken to provide for their families. In part two, I interviewed the women and children of the 3,000 families who live on the landfill, and Ressa shares the importance of education for the kids. This week, I'm finishing up the series by focusing on waste management, and Ressa shares her frustrations in trying to educate the children to have a more sustainable mindset, despite the mountain of trash growing larger each day. And so I want to carry the stories and experiences the families of Bantar Gebang so generously shared with me, to criticise New Zealand's own practices around waste. New Zealand is very much complicit in contributing to a global crisis on waste management, and recent policy changes has seen China and Malaysia stand against developed nations, sending their trash and recycling offshore to be processed. I reckon there is something uncomfortable about developed nations sending their trash to be processed by developing nations while still having the privilege to maintain our clean, green, tidy Kiwi image, all the while criticising places such as Asia. I also talked to Environment Minister Eugenie Sage on the new plans to New Zealand's recycling in response to the shake-up for countries to deal with their own trash domestically. According to the minister, New Zealand is still one of the highest producers of household waste in the developed world per capita. This is despite waste being the second most pressing issue for New Zealanders, according to research commissioned by the Ministry for the Environment. I begin by asking Ressa on the imminent closure of the landfill as it reaches maximum capacity with no long-term solution in place. In an interview with local Indonesian paper Compass in October last year, Jakarta Environment Agency head Iswana Adij says that the volume of garbage at Bantar Gebang has reached 39 million tonnes with a height of 40 metres. However, the maximum capacity is 49 million tonnes. Bantar Gebang receives up to 7,000 tonnes of garbage a day, and Iswana expects the dump site to only last for another 3 years. This means the new site will need to be found by 2021. However, when I asked Ressa on the proposed closure of the landfill, she says it's already full, and building an incinerator will not solve the underlying problem. Instead, she hopes that waste reduction will begin in the homes, with sorting of plastics and waste.
That's why they keep coming and then dump the rubbish in this place. It's full already, I can see, it's very high. And then I had a meeting with the government in this city, and then with together with the chief of the management of the landfill, and then they keep talking about the landfill and stuff. And I remember they mentioned the reason why they built incinerator, because they want to reduce the rubbish come into that mountain. Then also because they couldn't find a new place to dump the rubbish. And yeah, I mentioned on that meeting what the government needs to do is to sort the rubbish. Mm-hmm. It's not to find a new place to dump the rubbish, but to sort from home, from the house. Then because like on that time, also I remember some people protest. If you close the landfill, how people gonna live?
Ressa faces a difficult tension in that she understands the environmental concerns of activists, but Bantar Gebang is also the home and source of livelihood for the thousands of families who live. It's where the parents of the children of the school she runs earn their living. And with the proposed incinerator, Ressa says that the government management predicts that the landfill could be extended to 10 more years. But this isn't a long-term solution.
How to educate people about rubbish, about the waste and stuff, mm-hmm. and then start from household, and then it will help Bantar Gebang as well.
Yeah.
But sometimes, as the activist, sometimes for me, like talk as activist is a bit difficult, because in one side I see, oh, this is not good for environment, but one side I see my kids live from that rubbish, from that waste. And then, so what the solution from me is good for environment and good for my kids is how to make the waste management become something legit, and then the parents of my kids can work there and then get money and support the children.
Because how do most Indonesians feel about waste management and like recycling and looking after the environment?
If I can be honest, I think maybe around 20% Indonesian people care about this stuff. But for the rest of people, they will say, oh, there's Bantar Gebang. Send to Bantar Gebang, solve the problem. And then like, don't want to call them being ignorant, but
the real world.
Do they not know or do they not care?
They don't care. And also like...
It's not an educational thing.
Like, yeah.
The Australians and I laugh as she explains the ignorant attitude. Another journalist student remarks, is it because they just don't care? And yeah, we're laughing and joking with Ressa, but how much ignorance do developing nations hold when we ship our recycling overseas to be dealt with? In primary school, most New Zealanders learn about being a tidy Kiwi, to reduce, reuse and recycle, to take and leave nothing in our parks, our beaches. Yet when it comes to our recycling, we ship 13,800 tonnes, with 4.2 million to Indonesia. In an interview with One News, Ressa says recycling companies are happier to get waste from New Zealand, as it's cleaner than waste in Bantar Gebang, which could drive down the prices and demand for collected plastic. She says it's weird, it's strange, because we in Indonesia struggle to deal with our own waste, and then we get more coming in from other countries. Ressa hopes one day countries will want to keep their own countries clean by dealing with their own waste domestically. And I ask her how she responds to people saying it's pointless trying to teach children of BGBJ, the school she runs on Bantar Gebang, to recycle, to minimise waste. And she says, yeah, it is hard because people joke that they live in a landfill with rubbish everywhere. What's the point when the rest of Jakarta doesn't care?
Biggest rubbish mountain in Southeast Asia. And they say, even they didn't know that's the biggest. And it's like, I don't want we make that mountain of rubbish become bigger. So we need to do something in BGBG. And the kids like, how? It's like, well, I will stop giving you the paper box for our event. And also not using the, you know, in Indonesia we have the aqua, but the small one,
yes.
Aqua glass. Yeah, aqua glass with a straw.
Yeah.
And I said to the kids, like, no, we don't want to give you this kind of stuff on the event or anytime. So what we're going to do for our feeding program, we will give you the lunch box and then provide the water bottle. And please, if you go to the neighbor to buy your drinks, use your water bottle. Or we ban the plastic coming to our school. So if you see anybody using the straw and the plastic, please tell them, drink outside, not inside, because this is the rule in BGBG. And then I said, yeah, it's true, we couldn't reduce that mountain because it's big already, but we can support this behavior not to produce
more. Auckland Council's website, it says New Zealand's recycling at a materials recovery facility, where food scraps and other unrecyclable products are taken out. This is then processed in an automatic facility with optical scanners to identify different types of plastics. This is then sent overseas. And while we do now have our first PET processing plant, which deals with plastic bottles, there are still numerous types of plastics which cannot be dealt with in New Zealand currently. China used to take in 2.7 million tonnes of New Zealand's plastic waste recycling. However, with its new policy, National Sword has put tight restrictions on 24 types of waste, including plastic recycling. This has meant countries such as Australia and New Zealand having to look to Southeast Asian countries to take in recyclable plastics. Malaysia is the second highest importer of our plastic recycling, taking in 9,100 tonnes, worth $1.7 million. However, just last month, Malaysia is sending back illegally smuggled plastic waste from the US, UK, Canada and Australia. Malaysia's Environment Minister, Yao Bi Yin, says Malaysia will not be a dumping ground to the world. We will fight back. Even though we are a small country, we can't be bullied by developed countries. I talked to New Zealand's Environment Minister, Eugenie Sage, on the proposed changes to New Zealand's recycling processes through the recommendations established by a task force set up in response to these restrictions from China on offshore waste. I begin by asking her what these proposed changes are.
Well, this is a response to China's National Sword Initiative, which means that we can't just send our waste offshore and expect it to go away. And so there's been work done by a task force, which was established in June last year, which involved councils and recycling operators working with Ministry for the Environment. So that task force came up with 8 recommendations. I've accepted all 8 recommendations, so they'll be a key part of the Ministry for the Environment's work program for 2019 and beyond. And some of those recommendations are really simple things, like ensuring that there are model contracts that councils, recycling operators can use to ensure that there's more consistency around New Zealand and to improve the quality of materials that are collected for recycling and reprocessing. Another is an education campaign, Recycle It Right, so that Kiwis know what to put out and not to contaminate their recyclables with food, with rubbish that belongs in the landfill. If operators get materials like glass, tins, PET, plastics or drink bottles, that's clean, that's sorted and in the crates and wheelie bins, then it's much easier for them to find markets for those than if it's contaminated with rubbish.
Where does our recycling currently go?
Well, we need, another of the recommendations is developing more capacity here in Aotearoa New Zealand to reprocess things like fibre for cardboard and paper, and to reprocess some of those harder to use plastics, the 3-7s, the things like hummus containers, for example. At the moment, operators can find markets for PET, the drink bottle plastics, because that's a high-value plastic, and that can be reprocessed here in New Zealand into more PET packaging. That can be done several times.
Okay, so we do our own plastic bottle recycling here.
We can reprocess the 1 and 2. We can reprocess the 1 PETs here, but there are good markets overseas for the 2. For 3-7, that commodity market has really collapsed. We can reprocess some of our paper and cardboard here in New Zealand. There's 2 plants. We need to increase our capacity to do that.
Yeah.
That's one of the recommendations is a feasibility study around where and how we could establish that capacity.
Right, because we used to send it to China, but I know that a lot of the plastic's being sent to Indonesia or other developing nations in Asia. So how are we tracking the accountability when we send it overseas?
So the key there is that Indonesia and Malaysia are also tightening what they're importing. So those operators that are exporting clean, high-value materials like the PET have still got good markets for those. So one of the other recommendations is that we'll be working on is can we use regulations under the Waste Minimisation Act to require a certain amount of recycled content in packaging, for example, so that makes sure that there's a market for reprocessing materials. Can we use regulations to, should we use regulations to phase out some of those harder to reprocess materials like the single-use low-value plastics, or 3, 4, 6 and 7?
There was talk about minimising plastic packaging when the plastic bags were being phased out. So what are there any recommendations around that kind of issue?
That's a small component of the waste stream.
Okay.
Much bigger volumes are going to landfill from the commercial and industrial sector, the construction sector, and that's another issue that's being worked on. So it's not just plastics, but some of these harder to use plastics we need to tackle, and that's part of the work stream.
Yeah. And my final question is, there's been some criticism about how New Zealand sends our plastic overseas for that to be dealt with rather than dealing with it here. Is there any response to that?
Well, that's one of the big challenges. China's National Sword Initiative has made it very clear that we can't just send our waste offshore. There is no away. We need to deal with it here in New Zealand. We need to reduce the amount of waste we generate. And that's why in the fibre and plastic space, there's going to be a feasibility study to look at what are the plants that we need to establish here in New Zealand so that we can reprocess more paper and cardboard here and more of our plastics here. How do we reduce the volume of problem plastics that's getting into the waste stream? Oh, so one of the key things in terms of reducing plastic and other waste is looking at product stewardship schemes for packaging so that manufacturers consider what happens to it once a product is used by the consumer. And that can encourage manufacturers to use materials that can be easily recovered and recycled, and to discourage materials that are much harder, like the 3, 4, 6 and 7.
Hmm. I spent my summer visiting Bontegavang, which is the largest landfill in Southeast Asia. So, yeah, I'm just doing a specific report around...
Oh, right.
Yeah, recycling.
Yeah, yeah, so where there are good markets for quality product, that's fine. But Malaysia's tightening, Indonesia too, and we're still in the catch-up mode. But this plan is aiming to have a consistent and coordinated response across New Zealand with our 78 councils and with central government and working with businesses in the recycling sector. So there's lots of opportunity for more jobs as well. It's not going to solve the landfill problem overnight. It's not going to solve waste exports overnight, but we need to change the way we deal with waste because we can't just send it offshore.
That was Environment Minister Eugenie Sage. However, our chat has also left me with more questions around what exactly these recommendations are. I appreciate and recognise that the Minister is correct saying that these problems won't be solved overnight. However, the public needs to be stepped through what these recommendations are. Are more plastic recycling plants going to be funded? What scientific research is happening for us to figure out how to recycle, how to manage our waste more efficiently, more productively? How are we going to increase our capacity to process? I'm hoping I could chat to her soon again to get an actual answer on how we track the accountability of our waste going offshore. Because it sounds like it's going to be a while before New Zealand sets up a sustainable process of dealing with our own waste domestically. And so in the meantime, how do we make sure that what's going overseas is being taken care of properly? I go onto the Auckland Council's website, which gives these reasons as to why New Zealand sends our plastic recycling overseas. The website says, since New Zealand has a relatively small population, we don't generate a lot of recyclable material, so there's not so much demand for recycling processing facilities in this country. Even though exporting our recyclables overseas means that they need to be transported further, it's often a better environmental option than using raw materials. Look, I don't know if this is a good enough reason for New Zealand to not clean up its own mess. And hopefully I can find out more about this, which is why I'll be talking to the team at WasteMins and other waste management groups in Aotearoa. And while this ends my segment for now on Bontegavang, I'll be continuing to investigate the complex issue of waste management. It is an overwhelming issue, especially with increased awareness around climate change and the importance to take real, tangible steps in mitigating environmental concerns. This anxiety is a feeling Ressa is all familiar with.
Because people keep telling me, some people make fun, come on Ressa, don't too hard to the children. People from around Jakarta just throw the rubbish to Bontegavang, and now you want them to carry their own lunchbox and then water bottle every Sunday? I said, I know, but at least in BGBG we teach them something. I know in front of their home, like, rubbish everywhere. But when they remember, at least one day they move from that house and then they live in the like a clean environment. They remember, I learned something in BGBG when I was kid. Now I continue to practice, because yeah, sometimes we got a guest and then they say like, oh, just throw the rubbish everywhere because we are in Bontegavang. And I said, don't.
In part two, I introduce Gilang, the 13-year-old boy who wants to be an astronaut. And Ressa very proudly tells us a story of him telling off a foreign volunteer drinking from a single-use plastic cup, and the pride she feels that he believes in her no plastic rule too.
I just talk to people straight away because you can hurt the children when you mention that. I just draw. If you met Gilang, your boys, yeah, Gilang.
Yeah.
And then Gilang, if you bring your the plastic with a straw from the neighbor, and then for him, no matter who you are, foreigner or Indonesian, he just came. I remember the foreigner that drink the, we call it ice manga, the cheap drink, only 1,000 rupiah. He just came like, hey, to the foreigner, hey, plastic, no. He just said that. And then Cicereza, Bilang, so he speak in like mixed Bahasa Indonesia, like Cicereza Bilang, plastic, no. He said like di luar, he said like outside, you want to drink your drink outside. But he speak in Bahasa, but the guest just like maybe he get it, and then he just like go outside. And after that he talked to me like, your student came to me, but in Bahasa Indonesia, but all I understand only no plastic, that's it. He mentioned Sister Teresa, maybe Sister Teresa said no plastic inside or something. I said, oh yeah. And sometimes Gilang just screaming, hey, kids, you didn't listen to me, no plastic. His friend didn't listen to him, and he just screamed like, Sister Teresa! Like, yeah, I said, yes, Gilang.
Well, this is the last part of my series on Indonesia. Next week, I'll be talking to community recycling group Loop Group and Padukore's Zero Waste Program, and also one of the directors of Flight Plastics, one of New Zealand's only PET recycling plant, to understand what is actually being done in New Zealand to deal with waste. I'm also hoping that this is the start of new changes and conversations around the environment after Auckland Council declared a state of climate change emergency on Tuesday. While largely a symbolic action, Auckland Mayor says that we have an obligation to act and it will be irresponsible and reckless not to act. Thank you to Rissa Bernard and Ian for showing me around their school and home. You can find out more and support BGBJ by visiting their website, bgbj.org, and there's a hostel on site that is open to hosting volunteers to help out with lessons.
The Wire.